This is the English Heritage Podcast.
Hello, and welcome back to your weekly podcast, Into England's Past. I'm Charles Rowe. Coming up, we're at one of Northern England's finest country houses, Brodsworth Hall.
Peter Tellison, who was a merchant banker, when he eventually died, he had written a complicated will, which effectively meant that he was leaving Brodsworth and all of his other estates to his unborn great-grandchildren.
We'll find out why it's one of the many real country houses that can be compared to the fictional world of Downton Abbey.
Brodsworth is, I suppose you could say, the real thing, with the family who lived, loved, and then were responsible for the house falling into a sort of romantic decline or decay.
And we'll discover how, after years of gentle decay, it was finally saved for the nation. More from curator Eleanor Matthews in just a few moments. First, though, to prove how well maintained we are, let's show you what's coming up soon on the English Heritage Podcast.
This well is the deepest well in England. The real thing that people are fascinated about this well is there is the legend that Richard II buried his treasure when he was fleeing to Ireland, and the treasure's never been found.
We're scoring the paintings between 1 and 4, and 1 is in good condition and stable, and 4 is in poor condition and unstable. We will then have to sit down and decide where and what we need to do.
It's an amazing survival of an aristocratic townhouse. These kind of houses that used to be all over London, and really Apsley House is the only surviving example of that. And it still sort of sits there in splendid isolation.
Make sure you subscribe to get new episodes every Thursday. Now today, we're at one of the finest Victorian country houses in Northern England. Brodsworth Hall lies about 6 miles away from Doncaster in South Yorkshire. And it's effectively the result of the fourth generation descendant of a rich banker spending his inheritance money. It was built for Charles Sabine Augustus Tellison in the early 1860s as a family home for his wife and 6 children. Now, 3 of Charles and Georgiana's 4 sons married, but none of them had children. So the house and the estate gradually passed to each of the sons in turn. Eventually, the house was passed to a son of the youngest daughter, Constance. Her son, Charles Grant Dalton, came into ownership of the estate in 1931. Charles Grant Dalton's wife, Sylvia, lived at Brodsworth until she passed away in 1988, surviving 2 world wars, the death of 2 husbands, and all the time trying to care for the house and estate with increasingly limited means. By the late 1980s, the house was suffering from the ravages of time. Sylvia's daughter Pamela did not wish to live at Brodsworth anymore, and a solution was needed. Brodsworth Hall was crying out to be saved. It had become, as one English Heritage curator put it, a real Downton Abbey, a house of managed decline through time.
Hi, I'm Eleanor Matthews, and I'm the Curator of Collections and Interiors for English Heritage, and we're here at Brodsworth Hall, which came into the care of English Heritage in 1990.
Eleanor, we've very briefly recapped Brodsworth Hall's rise and fall, and it's a bit like the fictional story of Downton Abbey in some respects. What parallels can we draw between this house and the inhabitants of the fictional world of Downton Abbey?
Well, there's lots of parallels that you can draw between both Brodsworth as a country house and many other country houses around the country. It's a very large establishment, went through a lot of the same changes that Downton did, experiencing the First World War, experiencing staff and servants leaving, long-term staff staying a long time, short-term staff moving and changing around, changes in the family, deaths in the family. There's lots of different aspects that you can pick out. One of the main differences is that Downton is fictional and draws on lots of different storylines from lots of different houses, and whereas Brodsworth is, I suppose you could say, the real thing, with the family who lived, loved, and then were responsible for the house falling into a sort of romantic decline or decay.
What was the sort of story of the decline over time? What was actually happening in world history and English history at the time?
Well, it was a mixture. Both the First World War and the Second World War had a big impact. Lots of houses were occupied by the army. They did a lot of damage to the houses. Staff that went away to the war didn't come back and didn't want to come back, didn't want to go back into service. Female staff members who worked at houses during the First World War who had had more responsibility and had acted up in men's roles didn't want to go back to that. They wanted more independence. They wanted to continue that. Things like financial crashes, death duties, all sorts of factors like those all contributed to generally the decline of the country houses. Costs were rising. It sometimes became much more financially viable to knock a country house down and to sell off the building materials than to try and save it. And dwindling fortunes within the family just meant that sometimes a lot of the country houses, they had a real tough time in moving throughout the 20th century. And Brodsworth is really lucky that it stayed as long as it did with one indomitable owner, Sylvia Grant Dalton, who wanted to save Brodsworth. Although she couldn't upkeep it wholly, she really wanted to. And that's one of the reasons Brodsworth is still here today.
How does the story of Brodsworth Hall unfold? I gather it begins with a banker's will, a court case, and eventually this building being built.
Yes, it did. So back in the late 18th century, Peter Tellison, who was a merchant banker, bought the Brodsworth estate from various proceeds. He bought other estates around the country as well. When he eventually died, and he had written his will in 1796, he had written a complicated will, which effectively meant that he was leaving Brodsworth and all of his other estates to his unborn great-grandchildren. So his sons and his sons' sons couldn't inherit the site or any of his vast fortune, and that created an outcry. People couldn't understand how a man could be allowed to leave such a vast fortune, which was about £600,000, which is about £33 million in today's money, how he didn't want to perhaps leave that to his family. And that led through decades of wrangling and court cases and chancery law where his descendants challenged the will. They wanted to inherit Brodsworth. They couldn't. The house and the estate was occupied by a series of tenants. And then eventually in the late 1850s, one of Peter Tellison's great-grandchildren, Charles Sabine Augustus Tellison, inherited the Brodsworth estate.
And he came up from Brighton, didn't he? And he must have just thought he'd won the lottery.
Yeah, they were living on the south coast in Brighton at the time, and he moved up to Brodsworth, inherited the estate, decided that he wanted to live here, make their home here. There was a previous house, the old Brodsworth Hall, on the site at the time. That was a Georgian house. It was probably very big, very rambling. We have a few photographs of it, but not many. Probably was decided not modern, and what Charles wanted to do was make his own stamp felt on society, decided to knock the old Brodsworth Hall down and build the current Brodsworth Hall that we see today, which was built and furnished in 3 years, which was phenomenally fast for the Victorian period. And that's the house that visitors can come and see today.
So they started in 1861
to 1863 was when the house was built and furnished. And we say it was probably finished in around 1865-66, which is when all of the sculptures came. Both the sculptures that are in the inside of the house and in the gardens, and they completed the decorative scheme.
So that's the sound of the gong. So that means dinner is served. Let's go and have a look in the dining room and see what we've got in there. It's a very grand room, carpeted, got a chandelier in the centre, lots of pictures and portraits on the walls, and a clock to one side. And this is south facing, which would have been nice for when you have guests coming for maybe a midsummer's meal. But it's a room where you can see some of the decline over the centuries.
So we're looking at the original set of chairs that were supplied for the house when the house was built. They've always been in the dining room, and they would have originally been a very shiny, beautiful maroon leather, but they're now very cracked, they're very worn, damaged. You wouldn't want to sit on them because you might fall through the seat. And that shows the time and the careworn aspect of the chairs, that shows decades and generations of families sitting on them and using them for banquets and for parties and things like that. And it really shows how the chairs have lived.
When does Brodsworth really start to decline? It starts off as quite a lush family home. There's lots of people living here, lots of children. After a while, as children leave and get older and get married, I think perhaps is that when the decline begins?
Yeah, it's a cumulative effect, and it's probably when the fourth son, Augustus, inherits in 1919, that he was a relatively absentee landlord because he lived elsewhere mostly. The amount of servants and staff that were needed were reduced. And then when the next generation inherited, when Charles Grant Dalton inherited in the 1930s, he brought his wife and his daughter to live at Brodsworth. They didn't need as many servants, so again, they had a relatively few number. They didn't have as much money as the original inhabitants of the house. Their funds declined, so they tried to look after the house and maintain it as best they could. So it's probably from the sort of 1930s onwards that the decline really sets in, and particularly from after the Second World War, when the house was occupied by the army. It's after that period when there were even fewer servants, even fewer staff, and rooms started to be closed off and used as storerooms, and you can really see that as you walk around the house.
What are the other layers of history that we can see in this room?
Well, the dining room is one of the best rooms to see the layers of impact that each generation has had. So you have the Victorian decorative scheme, the lovely gilding and moulding in the ceiling. But then you also have objects like the carpet, which is not the original dining room carpet. It was already a replacement in the early 20th century, and that's a blue colour. And then you have the later interventions that Sylvia made. We've got these lovely bright blue synthetic floor-to-ceiling curtains that were probably installed in the 60s or 70s.
Quite turquoisey,
done probably to match the Edwardian carpet, which is a nice blue. But it just shows the different layers that each generation has added to the house, and that's shown and visible in so many different rooms. And it's one of the reasons that Brodsworth is so important, because it's not wholly a time capsule, but shows the layers of history that one house over three generations, and what the impact those generations have had on the house.
Okay, well, let's enter into some of the other rooms which display various layers of history. We're on the south side still, aren't we? On this main carpet throughout the centre of the house. And the thing that sticks out, of course, is these shutters.
Yeah, we had to restore all of the window shutters, and I've recently had another major conservation project to restore them again. They're actually very rare shutters. They were made by a company called Francis & Co, patent revolving shutters, and they're almost floor-to-ceiling window shutters that cover the plate glass windows, and they're the only surviving set in the country that survives to this extent, and they're in most of the ground floor. And they were, again, one of the things that Charles used when he built Brodsworth to show off his money, to show off his desire for a new kind of practical house, and got the latest designs in window shutters. They have a wonderful sound when you open them, and staff still open them, but it's lovely that it means that visitors can look out into the gardens as the family would have experienced it.
So we're standing in the music/drawing room.
Yep, this is the drawing room. One half of the drawing room is slightly smaller than the other, and that was specifically designed for music. And the drawing room would have been the more feminine part of the household, where the ladies would have withdrawn and done painting and sewing and chatting and talking and played music and things like that after dinner, but also during the day. And it's one of the most spectacular rooms in the house. It's got this lovely reddish pinkish silk wall covering that visitors can see. It's got the two phenomenal chandeliers, which were originally gasoliers. When the house was built, it was supplied with gas, not electricity.
And gilding in these silk wallpapers as well?
Yeah, gilded fillet, the kind of wooden surrounds for some of the silk wall covering. But the drawing room as well, you initially come in and you think, wow, it's this wonderful Victorian interior, and it is that. But it also shows how the family, and how Sylvia Grant Dalton in particular, in the later 20th century, had to adapt the house to maintain it as best she could. So you have the original silk wall coverings, but you also have some more modern textile and replacements that Sylvia put in where the original Victorian coverings had shredded through to light damage and decay.
And we see that contrast in some of them being pinkish and some of them being more reddish.
Yeah, you also see it in some of the upholstered furniture where the threads are coming bare, it's worn through. But again, visitors often like it because they can see how the house has been used. It's not a show home, it's a family home, and that's what they really like.
Some of the other things that stick out is sort of the dark charcoal-y effect on the columns. What's that down to? Is that down to people having had parties and smoking? And
yeah, it's probably a mixture of people being in the room. So in the drawing room, particularly in the 1930s, they used to have hunt balls in here. What you can see on the columns, the kind of dirty marks, that's the grease and dirt from people's hands over time touching them has become ingrained into the surface. But it's also due to pollution in the air. This is a very industrial area. There were lots of coal mines, so lots of coal dust and pollution from that industry has come into the house and had to be all cleaned off as best as possible when English Heritage took on Brodsworth.
Well, let's move out of the drawing room and we'll head north on the sort of red carpet which fills the entire property and is kind of like our guiding path.
Do we want to go up in the lift?
I'll say yes. Now, when was this lift installed?
The lift was installed in about 1952 for Charles Grant Dalton, and when he broke his leg. But unfortunately, he passed away before he could actually use it.
Oh.
But it is still vital, particularly for when Sylvia, when she was an elderly lady, and for us now to move furniture and different bits of equipment up and down the lift. It's a wonderful thing to have in a house like ours.
I understand that Sylvia might have got stuck in this a few times. We're not going to get stuck, are we?
I hope not. I think not. Yes, she... The lift did break down quite often, and Sylvia got so used to the lift breaking down that she decided she wanted something to look at and something to read while she was waiting for some of the estate staff to come and rescue her. So she papered the wall shaft with a number of postcards, photographs, drawings, things like that, to give her something to read while she was waiting. And all of those objects that she put on the walls of the lift shaft are still there today, and we can still see them as we go up and down in the lift.
Door opening. And the gate goes back. Eleanor's shutting the door now. And then obviously pulling the gate again. That's a real squeak.
It's quite annoying.
You need some WD-40 on that. Or some oil. Okay, you press the button. We're going up to the first floor.
And if you can see on the wall here, there are all of the photographs. Wedding photographs, postcards, holiday snaps. Lots of different things.
And we've arrived on the first floor. So we're still on the west side. And we've come out onto a landing. Okay, so let's head down to a bedroom. We're just turning the corner and we're going down a very long, wide corridor with lots of furniture and paintings as well. Now, as listeners can probably tell, we have walked onto a wooden surface and there's no carpet here anymore, but this is a bedroom which has suffered from the ravages of time and sunlight, really. Can you describe what we're looking at, Eleanor?
So we're in what's called the boat bedroom, which was the main guest bedroom at Brodsworth. And when the house started to, the household started to get smaller and they had less parties, less friends visiting, things like that. It's one of the first rooms that really stopped being used by the family. So the carpet was taken away and put into another bedroom. Various other objects were just put in here and left in here. The wallpaper was left to peel and to fade and to degrade and to flake off. So the room really shows that sort of declining atmosphere, a sort of gentle decay, that the room has been forgotten by the family. The door was shut, and this is pretty much how visitors would see it now.
The main features are what looks like a sleigh bed. We've got a giant wardrobe, a large mirror, swinging mirror, and a wash area as well.
Marble-topped wash stands with ewers and wash basins, because they wouldn't have had sinks in the bedrooms, although some of Brodsworth's bedrooms do have sinks that were installed in the 1960s or 70s. It's all the sort of furniture that the family didn't really need anymore, so bed steps, invalid beds, large cots, old chandeliers. It's a combination of all of the sorts of different objects that just became slightly abandoned, and that's one of the great things about Brodsworth, is that the family didn't throw things away, and they had enough space that they didn't need to put things in a skip or bin things. They could just put it in a room, and then we open the door and we see all these beautiful objects from a bygone time that we can now share with people.
Even the poor paintings to our right here have suffered from the effects of time. They've become peeled and slightly warped.
Yeah, some of the paintings have suffered, both from time and the effects of light and wrong temperature and humidity and things like that, but also from the materials that the paintings were actually made from degrade themselves inherently. So you can see the painting of this one, the girl with a salver, and it's bubbling and starting, and there's not much that can be done about that.
The wallpaper, though, we can't really see any. It almost looks like it's been peeled away, but if you look to the left-hand side of the room, it's still hanging on the wall and it's peeling away. It's almost like you'd peel a plaster off a wound or something. What colour would that have been originally? Because what we're looking at right now, it's very grey.
It would have been probably white, sort of pearly white effect. Quite light, quite pretty, quite Art Nouveau. There's a lovely, it's very faded now and very flaked off, but a frieze of wisteria around the top of the room. And because this room we know was last decorated in the early 20th century from a company, Hall and Armitage, who are based in Wakefield, it's a very early example of the decorative scheme. And it's not been changed since that point. So all of the folding wallpaper and cracks and things like that, English Heritage has conserved them as they are to show the decline of the house throughout the 20th century and to show how rooms might have got had things just been how they are at Brodsworth.
I suppose the dead giveaway for when it was closed off is the plug sockets underneath the window there. They look almost European. They're not the sort of modern ones that we would see today.
No, they're very much smaller three-pin plugs. So they were put in the early part of the 20th century. But yeah, we don't use them now. And we're going down the seventh staircase now, which would have been very worn and very wonky and would have been quite difficult to walk down. But at some point in the 20th century, you can see they've inserted stone replacements.
A different colour as well.
Yep.
Sort of like a darker grey. Right, so you've brought me into the main kitchen, and this is literally the heart of the home. Tell us what we're looking at.
So we're standing in the Victorian kitchen, the main kitchen for the household when the house was built. It's smack bang in the centre of the house with a very large top-lit window. In here you've got the ranges, cooking equipment, the desks, the benches, the copper kettles, containers, everything you could need to cater for the vast army of people who would have been living and working at Brodsworth in its heyday.
It's very large. 20 by 20 feet, something like that?
Yeah, it's a very large room.
So in the Victorian heyday, how many people do you think would be in here working?
There probably would have been anything between maybe 4 and 8 people working in this room, depending on what time of year it was and what was happening and things like that. And kind of the cooks, the kitchen maids would have generally always been in here. And then you would have had scullery maids in some of the other rooms doing different various jobs around the kitchen as well.
Would the footmen come in this door, or would they have been hovering by that hatch in the corner there?
The footmen generally wouldn't have come into the kitchen. They would have gone to the hatch just in the far corner of the room that we can see, because through that hatch you're about 2 to 3 metres away from the entrance to the dining room, which was fantastic. So it meant that Charles Tellison and his family didn't have to wait for their food to go cold, walking through lots of corridors before it reached them. It was a very, very quick and very practical and very modern way of designing the kitchen to be so close to the family dining room.
So this was the height of innovation in a culinary sense.
It was, in terms of its position within the home. It was a real modern way of designing a house.
And we still live like that today, in a way. Albeit on a smaller scale.
On a smaller scale, people do these days. I mean, in my house and probably yours as well, the kitchen is very close to your main living spaces, and it is one of the main areas of the home.
And one of the things that indicates the passage of time is the fact that the clock in the centre of the room is about 4 minutes to 8. It's stuck at 4 minutes to 8, almost as if dinner is ready to be served. Just gone past a family there who, I think the mum has just said, Charlotte wants to live here. I don't blame her. It's actually, you know, despite the fact that it has worn away at the edges due to the passage of time, it's still quite a homely place, isn't it?
It's a livable house. People can imagine living at Brodsworth. It's not a very grand, large, ostentatious show home. It's a home for the landed gentry. He wanted to impress, but he also wanted to build a home that he and his family could live in. And it is a house that people like.
How does a house like this decline over time?
Well, with the kind of contributing factors of a lack of money and dwindling time and death duties and things like that, if you don't maintain a house, if you don't look after the guttering, the roofs, the building work, the stonework, the things like that, the house just starts generally to decay, which happened particularly in the last sort of 30 or so years when Sylvia Grant Dalton was living here, which meant that when English Heritage took on the house in 1990, the house was suffering quite badly. There was rising damp, there was falling damp, there was a major pest infestation of carpet beetle and silverfish and other creepy crawlies. The roof was leaking, the house was subsiding from mining activity in the area. You name the problem, Brodsworth had it. So there was a major 5-year conservation programme initially to stabilise the house and to make it suitable and ready and to take care of the house, to make it stable, to be open to the public and for visitors to be able to come and see it.
How long was that restoration work?
The initial project was 5 years, but it's been ongoing ever since that point. It never finishes, it's always ongoing. So we have conservation teams, we measure the environment, we do conservation work on the interiors, the gardens are being restored. It's a continually ongoing process.
Because most English Heritage properties you go to, it's a replication of a particular period, but here it's only the gardens which are the Victorian period, and everything else in here is sort of a bit of a mishmash, isn't it?
Yeah, the decision was taken that the house would be conserved to show the passage of time, to show the decline, to show how the family did actually live in the house. The gardens were originally extremely overgrown as well. They were like a jungle. We've got various photographs that show that. But the decision was taken to restore the gardens. So the house has been conserved. The gardens have been restored to their Victorian glory, I would say. And that's partly because the gardens did become so overgrown. But the original planting schemes and plans and bedding designs and things like that were still there underneath the undergrowth. So that's been a gradual process over the last 30 years to restore the gardens, and various projects are ongoing to keep that momentum going today.
So the interior looks more or less as it was found in the late 1980s, early 1990s, when English Heritage took over. Do you think there'll ever be a time where we see a partial restoration or even a full restoration? I'm sure it would cost millions of pounds, but do you think that will ever happen?
I don't think it would be the right thing to do to restore Brodsworth fully as to how it would have been, because to do that would mean you'd have to strip away some of the layers of history of the house. You'd have to take away many of the objects that were found here. You'd have to stop talking about various servants that were here in the 20th century and only talk about Victorian servants. And the feeling, the atmosphere that Brodsworth has, that's what should be kept and should be preserved in the household. And if you strip away that, then you're taking away what makes Brodsworth, Brodsworth.
You've been listening to the English Heritage Podcast. To find out more about Brodsworth Hall and Gardens and its similarities with the fictional Downton Abbey, head to the dedicated page on the English Heritage website. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. See you next time.